Hey, I'm Antonio Grisefo, and this is the Brooklyn Monk in Asia podcast, number 12, working on Big American TV, part 2. I got back to my apartment in Bangkok and immediately received a phone call from Johnny Civello. Tony, Bobby, Bobola, I'm calling to talk to you about the dress for tomorrow. We can't have you going in there in some fakakta outfit you found in a trash dumpster. I'll be wearing my Muay Thai gear, won't I? I asked. Yes, but I mean at night, when you take the maid out to go and watch the fights. I was thinking you should wear a 3-button polo shirt and some nice jeans. I don't own jeans or a polo shirt, but I was thinking I'd wear, you know, like a sleeveless t-shirt and walking shorts. I know that's what you're planning to wear. That's why I called. Ouch. So now, it's not just my narcissistic personality. It's also my fashion sense. Let me tell you something about business. I was born with nothing, and I still have most of it. I didn't get wealthy, but I didn't starve either. I make a nice living with TV because I know how to do business. And the first rule of business is, you have to dress like success. Do you want I should let you walk in there wearing verschlugen or dreck? You keep on like that and you'll always be a nebbish, a nobody. Then suddenly, Johnny Civello changed gears and showed me he could play hardball. Can't come up with an outfit like that. I'm sure we can find someone else who can, he said. Johnny Civello was this unpleasant when I was working for free. I probably couldn't handle working for him when money was on the line. I glanced at the clock. It was nearly 11 p.m. I could think of 20 places in Bangkok that you could go at that hour and watch a ping pong show where girls smoked cigarettes without using their hands. But there was nowhere to buy clothes. On the other hand, there was probably nowhere else to get a Thai-speaking Muay Thai guy who works well on camera and works for free. Okay, I'll wear what you want, I answered, and we hung up. I tore through my closet, and luckily, I found the one pair of jeans that I own in the whole world. This was a stroke of luck because I thought these jeans were in Taiwan, which is where my polo shirts were. I didn't have a polo shirt, but I did find a blue dress shirt that looked cool if I left it untucked and opened the top couple of buttons. I rolled the shirt and jeans into a ball and stuffed them down in my bag under my training gear and went to sleep. At the hotel the next morning, I met the crew, consisting of a director, 2 cameramen, a sound guy, the host, and her assistant, and a bunch of Thai guys who drove the van, set up equipment, and ran errands. This was all stuff I did for myself on Martial Arts Odyssey, so I was a little jealous. I've actually had to leave my camera running, sitting on a pile of old tires, so I could be in the shots myself. I didn't need a sound guy because the only microphone was on the camera, so pretty much if the camera was rolling, the whole room was mic'd. An assistant? Man, I gotta get me one of those. If I had an assistant, I would never lift anything over 5 pounds again. In fact, I would just brag about it like, oh, this all sounds very interesting. I'll have my assistant run the contract over to your office in the morning. But then the reality set in. At the end of the month, all these people would expect to get paid. I have a hard enough time making a living. If I started having to split my zero income with 10 people, I'd actually wind up negative. So I guess I'll just keep doing everything myself. This way, only one person starves. They were one of the nicest TV crews I'd ever worked on. They all asked me about my time spent with the rebels in Burma and time spent living in a monastery. It made me feel great that people with jobs and money had taken the trouble to look at my website. The other thing that made them all seem very human was that the director was complaining that he couldn't get his laundry done. The $300 a night rooms were paid for by the network, but the crew was on their own for everything else. The problem with staying in expensive hotels is they charge by the piece for laundry. Shirts cost $2 to wash, but in Thailand you could get a new shirt for $3. For $4, you could get a new shirt and pay someone else to wear it. My laundry was cheap because I went to a normal Thai place, which cost me about $2 a day. But for the crew, their entire per diem was being eaten up by laundry and expensive internet. Meals were another issue. Where I could eat on the street for a couple of dollars, they were all forced to eat off the hotel menu, where a salad cost, no lie, 700 baht. 21 U.S. dollars. But Chinatown is right across the street, I said. Why not go there and eat? Food is great and it's cheap. The crew explained to me, and this actually made sense. They were filming only 5 days in Thailand, then 5 days in Sri Lanka, and 5 days in Malaysia. They never stayed anywhere long enough to get acclimated, and if they ate local street food, they'd all get ill. This reminded me that I've been living over here for years and just took it for granted that I can eat anywhere I want. And normally, I don't get sick. When I do get sick, we just work around it. When I was filming Martial Arts Odyssey, MMA in Saigon, I'd had terrible diarrhea for 5 consecutive days. I was so weak, we had to film in 2 and 3 minute increments with long bathroom breaks in between. During the grueling exercise sequences, dehydration and fatigue actually worked well. The audience really saw how hard the training was. But the fight scenes had to be filmed on a separate day because I was just too weak to fight and make it look convincing. In big American TV, there was no extra day for filming. You had to keep exactly to the schedule. One show I worked on told me they spent $10,000 to $15,000 per day. So they definitely couldn't afford to do extra days of shooting simply because someone had stomach pains. Johnny Civello asked to see the outfit I would wear to the fight. I pulled the wrinkled shirt and jeans from the bag, and he made a horrible face. "Don't you want an iron?" he asked, like an accusation. "No, I sold it for crack," I admitted. "Don't worry," said the star. "I'll have my assistant iron it for you." The assistant took my outfit and assured me it would be ready by evening. This instance reaffirmed my desire to obtain an assistant of my own. We drove out to Fairtex, and the owner met us in the parking lot. Mr. Lin was a super nice guy. He took us to the Fairtex shop and said, "Take whatever you want." Wow! Talk about kid in a candy store. I got a whole Fairtex boxing uniform that is made of some sort of space-age material that breathed and allowed sweat to evaporate. I got extremely cool gladiator shorts and hand wrappings made of some sort of light, clingy material that gave me the best wrap of my life. As I was leaving the shop, the attendant asked me, "Do you need gloves?" Gloves? In my experience, boxing gloves weren't something people normally gave you for free. "Sure, if it's not too much trouble," I answered sheepishly. The attendant handed me a brand new pair of 10-ounce boxing gloves that matched my new outfit. For me, it was a huge windfall. For Fairtex, it was good advertising because I've worn those gloves in nearly every show I've done since then. And of course, they say Fairtex in huge letters. When Johnny Civello saw my Fairtex boxing outfit, he said, "It looks better than most of your normal clothes. You should dress like that all the time." The training area at Fairtex Bangkok is incredible. They had about 4 boxing rings and a forest of punching bags and kick bags. Bags were of all different sorts, heavy bags, medium bags, low kick bags. "Oh, look at this place," said Johnny Civello. "Fancy schmancy. You could kick those things over there. Maybe you could punch something over here. It's good. Just be sure to make love to the camera, bubbler." Fairtex comped us 2 hotel rooms, one for the star and one for me. So I guessed we wouldn't need to shower together. I changed my clothes, stepped out of my room, and bumped right into crew Api Day. He immediately took me in the ring and gave me a private Muay Thai lesson. Although he had excellent techniques to pass on, most of what he taught me was dirty fighting. He had a lot of step on the man's foot techniques and dislocate his knee accidentally and so forth. I'm kind of glad I never had to fight him. Star came out of her changing room a half hour later, and we started our Muay Thai lesson. She was extremely fit, and she apparently enjoyed learning Muay Thai. I taught her basic punch and elbow combinations. Her favorite seemed to be the uppercut elbow, because I told her it was one of the techniques that a woman could use to knock out a man. "Can I hit you with that again?" she asked after we'd practiced it several times. Unfortunately, the cameraman overheard her, and he went, "That's a good idea. Let's get that from every angle." She must have hit me with that uppercut elbow like 57 times. Next, I introduced her to Api Day and translated for her. When shooting was done, Johnny Civello said, "I got a nice lunch for you, boy chick. A happy nash. You're gonna love it. It's geschmack. Delish. Enjoy." With a build-up like that, I expected a full, hot meal prepared by the chef of the royal family. At the very least, I expected pastrami on rye. Instead, he handed me 2 tiny white bread sandwiches. "You gotta be kidding me. I worked all day. This is Thailand, with the best food in the world. And the best you could do for me was tuna on white bread? Vat, I should spend the whole day in the kitchen making gefilte fish and herring and white sauce for you. You prance around in your little shorts, hitting things with your shins, and you call this work? This is not work. This is amusement, a pastime. I'm a sugar pastime for people with rocks in their head. But it's nothing compared to work. Back in my grandfather's village, Vanatevka, we had to sell the mule to buy bread. Then my poor father had to pull the cheese cart through the snow by himself while his daughter ran off and married a Russian soldier." In his quest to become as Jewish as possible, Johnny Civello had adopted every media stereotype of Jews that he could find. Right now, he was Tevye from Fiddler on the Roof. "A human workhorse, my father. And you complain about a little filming. He would have filmed on his vacation, if he had taken a vacation. Which he didn't, because he was too busy working. That work buries you in the ground, and then the whole village had to move at the end." Yeah, I got it. Your family suffered. Suffering? I'll tell you about suffering. I have ulcers that burn like Hiroshima. I got three ex-wives demanding alimony payments. And my daughter used to be my son. Don't tell me about suffering, boy chick. 5,000 years of persecution my people endured. Your people, Johnny, you're Italian. We never suffered for anything. He was so deep in his delusion that he was ignoring me. Then, the day I told my father that I wanted to be a jazz singer instead of a cantor, he disowned me. I was shunned. Look, all I'm saying is, I worked for free. I worked hard. You didn't even buy me a plane ticket. The least you could do is get me a decent sandwich for dinner, like maybe a 12-inch meatball gyro. Occasionally, Johnny broke character and reverted to his Italian roots. I got you 12-inch right here, he said, making an obscene gesture. You know, like this. You couldn't see that, so it's not obscene. The crew was in a hurry to get to the next shoot, the star having drinks on the roof of the hotel at sunset. We were hustling out the door when I spied a kiosk where I bought some peanut M&Ms as a low-quality source of protein and two Cokes as a high-calorie, sugar-filled, weak form of caffeine. As it turns out, I was lucky, and Johnny had been looking out for me. I was the only one who got any dinner at all. In the car, everyone was staring at my sandwiches and junk food with envy. Johnny leaned over and poked me in the ribs. Am I a man of my word or what? Huh? 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 Do I take care of my employees? Huh? I was going to remind Johnny Civello that the definition of employee was tied in with a reasonable expectation of receiving wages. But I knew it was a losing argument. This was Hollywood, and I was a struggling author in Vietnam, which wasn't exactly the first-round draft choice for major motion pictures. I filled my mouth with tuna and M&Ms so I wouldn't be tempted to say anything negative. Every eye in the van was locked on my sandwich. No one actually asked for a piece, but I could see that they wanted to. I kept thinking of the scene in The Three Amigos where Martin Short and Steve Martin are dying of thirst, and Chevy Chase is liberally dumping water over his head and gargling and spitting. Finally, when the canteen is only half empty, he throws it away, turns to the other guys, and says, "Would you like some lip balm?" I wish I had the discipline to take a few bites out of that sandwich and say, "Ooh, too mayonnaise-y," and then throw it out the window. But I didn't. Instead, I wolfed down every last bite of sandwich and then used the Coke to swallow the entire pack of M&Ms like medicine. A few of the crew members looked like they were going to say something to me. But if they had, I just would have countered with, "Oh, you're getting paid." In theory, they could take their large Hollywood salaries and convert them to as many tuna on white bread sandwiches and peanut M&Ms as they wanted. When we arrived at the hotel, they told me that I wasn't needed for the next scene, which would take about 2 hours to film, so I had some much-needed downtime. For some reason, I get completely exhausted when I have to train or fight on film. Everyone else was worn out too, but they had to soldier on and do the next shoot. This is the prerogative of working for free. Since I didn't have a room at the expensive hotel, the episode director said I could use his room while everyone else was on the roof filming. In the elevator on the way up, he warned me, "If you want to take a nap, you can lay on the bed, but don't go under the covers, because that grosses me out." The room was a huge suite, so I opted to sleep on the couch, but there wasn't an extra blanket. Finally, as the director was bolting out the door to the shoot, he said, "Here, use this as a blanket." He handed me one of those $300 bathrobes that they give you in expensive hotels in the movies. The training with OpiDay plus the filming really knocked me out, and I slept for over an hour. When I woke up, I couldn't imagine being fit and ready for the Muay Thai Stadium shoot. I needed coffee quickly. Snooping around the kitchen, oh yeah, this hotel suite had a kitchen, a living room, and it even had indoor plumbing, which made it very different from hotels I would normally stay at. I found a coffee maker and some coffee grounds. Since I couldn't find a filter, I assumed this was some type of expensive coffee maker that didn't require a filter, so I dumped the grounds in the machine, filled it with water, and plugged it in. The next 15 minutes of my life were a bit of a blur, punctuated by the smell of burning coffee. The grounds clogged up the coffee machine and the brown water spilled over onto the heating element. The muddy liquid boiled, snapped, evaporated, and stunk. Then more water came out and more coffee grounds, which spilled onto the white counter and onto the white floor. It was like a coffee volcano, endlessly erupting and spewing searing, charred coffee magma. Magma. The coffee was shooting and bubbling out of the machine in puffs of steam. I was so desperate for a cup of Joe that I tried several times to reach in and grab the pot, but each time, the molten coffee sprayed on my hand, burning it, leaving a residue of charred coffee grounds and hair. Thinking fast, I wrapped my hand in the expensive bathrobe and used it for a pot holder. I picked up the pot, poured myself a cup of the dubious abortion of a brew, and returned the pot to the coffee machine, where it immediately began exploding and bubbling again. I did all of this with no injury to myself, but of course, the $300 bathrobe was ruined. But so much of life is a matter of perspective. The bathroom was only ruined if you consider being scorched and covered in splattered coffee stains ruined. In theory, it would still function as a bathrobe. You could robe yourself in the bath. And the smell of burned coffee, which I imagine would never wash out, would always be a pleasant way to wake up in the morning. What was I worried about? I'd obviously done the director a favor. I'd improved his bathrobe. I had myself so convinced, I felt he should thank me. I unplugged the machine and tossed it into the sink. Looking for a rag to clean up the mess, I only found a pile of very expensive white washcloths. I left the machine, the pot, the soiled washcloths, and other linens in the sink to cool, while I relaxed on the sofa, reading one of the director's magazines and drinking my well-earned cup of coffee. The liquid in my cup looked like a thin, fragrant soup, with coffee grounds floating on top. I used the director's Mont Blanc pen to shoo the grounds away from the rim so I could drink. I clenched my teeth to further filter the liquid and let it roll down on my tongue. For some reason, the brew was piping hot, like liquid marshmallows. It scorched the tongue, but that was a good thing because it killed the taste. Even strained through my teeth, the coffee grounds were still finding their way into my throat. Also, each sip left me with a dirty coffee mustache. When I was in the Army, and we were in the field without a coffee filter, we'd use a sock to strain the grounds. I rifled through the director's dresser drawer, but could only find silk socks. To filter coffee, you really need cotton or a cotton poly blend. The second choice for a makeshift coffee filter is toilet paper, but preferably the unscented kind. Not only was the toilet paper in the room perfumed, but it was coated with aloe vera. Beggars can't be choosers, so I went ahead and used it. I set one coffee cup on the counter, which is already a disaster area, and then covered the top of the cup with several layers of the slightly greasy paper, supported by several spoons. Next, I poured the coffee from my drinking cup into the cup on the counter. Things were going well at first. I could see the grounds collecting on the toilet paper. My plan was to finish pouring, then lift the spoons out of the cup, which would take the toilet paper and the grounds with it, leaving me with a relatively clean cup of coffee, which would taste all the better because I had made it from scratch, with love. But halfway through the process, the toilet paper melted and dropped into the cup. I fished it out with my fingers, scalding them. I was about to throw it into the sink when I realized that half the liquid was trapped in the paper. Thinking what a waste it would be to lose the coffee, I wrung the paper out, squeezing the hot mess firmly in my hand over the cup, dripping every last bit of coffee back into the cup. Every bit of coffee except the coffee that ran up my arms and spritzed all over the counter, the walls, and the bathrobe, which I was now wearing as a piece of safety equipment. Obviously, I didn't want to get my own clothes dirty. I saved the toilet paper to chew on later if I had a sudden craving for caffeine. When I sat back down on the couch with my coffee cup, I was pleased to see that a number of the grounds were gone, probably embedded in the bathrobe. The coffee still had to be strained through clenched teeth, but it was closer to good. There was a slight greasy film of aloe vera floating on top, which took away some of the natural bitterness of coffee, and freshened my breath. It also soothed the burns I'd got on my tongue during my first attempts to drink the coffee when it was clearly too hot. Living my life of being a constantly poor and struggling writer, I've learned to accept things as they come and create luxury where others see deprivation. For example, once during a survival trip in the jungle, I managed to build a poncho shelter under two fallen trees. The place I found for my shelter was the only flat in the whole region. There were no stones or stumps on the ground where I laid out my blanket. The two fallen trees extended my living space on either side of the poncho by a foot and a half, giving me a relative mansion compared to other cramped enclosures where I couldn't stretch out more than the width of my poncho. I used my duffel bag as a pillow and kicked back, feasting on the dried skin of a fish I'd killed the day before. For dessert, I had a handful of red berries, which turned out not to be poisonous. That day was pure luxury in comparison with the previous day or the next day. But it's all mental. A lot of people wouldn't like sleeping in the woods, covered in spiders and centipedes, eating dried fish skin. The director's hotel room was, for me, like a really good camping trip. I had a comfortable sofa to lie on. There was a smoldering campfire in the sink, which still spewed the pleasant aroma of coffee. I was reading the director's magazine and sipping my aloe coffee, straining it through my teeth. For me, life just didn't get much better than this. That's when I spied the complimentary box of chocolates sticking out of the welcome basket on the table. Imported chocolate and fresh brewed Thai coffee. I couldn't think of a better way of saying, welcome to Big TV. 40 minutes later, when the director opened the door, the first thing he noticed was the smoke. I was suddenly blessed with psychic powers, which alerted me to the fact that he was going to ask me about the smoke. This worried me, because I didn't have a plausible excuse for the smoke worked out yet. Luckily, the sight of the blackened washcloths and wrecked coffee machine distracted him. He took 2 steps into the room and froze, as if deciding what sort of names to call me. I was running through possible options, insults for the country bumpkin who ruined your hotel suite, but the epitaph that he screamed was not even on the list. You drank my coffee! What am I supposed to drink for breakfast? You gotta have a special place in your heart for people who get angry about the fact that you drank their coffee, but don't mind you destroying thousands of dollars worth of home appliances and linens. Fortunately for me, the phone rang, urging us downstairs for the next shoot. And almost the same instant, the assistant came to the door with my freshly ironed clothes. We all piled into the van. Everyone else was tired, but I was just waking up. They all mentioned how hungry they were because we had worked through dinner. Fortunately for me, I'd snagged some bread off a buffet table in one of the hotel conference rooms on the way out. While my colleagues looked like they would collapse at any moment, I smeared butter and jam packets on my pilfered rolls and bagels. First you drank my coffee, the director exclaimed. Now you're eating in front of me? Since I was probably never going to get to work with this director again, I went ahead and rubbed it in. Sorry, it's just that after my nap, I needed a snack. At the stadium, the star and I took spots, standing along the railing on the second tier. We were mic'd, but the cameras were shooting us from the other side of the arena. That was cool. A martial arts odyssey, we couldn't even do a shot like that because there would be no audio. Actually, we would do it twice, once from a distance for visual and once close up for audio. And then I would sync them together. Or more accurately, I would lay the video over the audio and not really care if they synced or not. But with Big American TV, we were able to get audio and visual at the same time. Technology is a great thing. Gotta get me some of that. And while we're on the list of great things, an assistant would be nice. Also, hotel rooms with stuff like living rooms and coffee and a $300 bathrobe. And of course, there was the big difference between me and all the Big American TV people. They were getting paid, and I wasn't. The shoot at the fight only took about 30 minutes, and we left. The driver of the crew van dropped the star and her assistant at the hotel, then took me to the subway. On the way home, I thought, and not for the first or last time, Big American TV is great, and I finally agree with all my friends and family. I gotta get my own show. But that's it for this episode of the Brooklyn Monk in Asia podcast. If you liked it, please subscribe. If you hated it, send a copy to 10 people you don't like, and please leave me a comment. My books, Warrior Odyssey and The Monk from Brooklyn, are available on Amazon.com and from my website, SpeakingAdventure.com. You know how there are people who you pretend you like? You don't hate them. You don't want them to die slowly, painfully in a dentist chair. But you don't necessarily need to spend any more time with them than absolutely necessary. And then they go like, why do you never visit me? And you're like, well, because I don't really like you. No. No one wants to say that, so you go, yeah, sure, I've been meaning to visit you, but there was a fire in Peru, and people needed dialysis. How about next Wednesday? Okay, so, like, here's my question. Why don't you visit my website, speakingadventure.com? When you get there, you can sign up for my newsletter, shoot me an email, or most important, donate to the Keep Antonio Writing and Filming Fund. You can also get my DVD, Martial Arts Odyssey Volume 1, from lulu.com or my website, speakingadventure.com. As a constant in my life, I'm completely broke and trying to think of how to make a buck. I was considering starting a Ponzi scheme, like Bernie Madoff, but I don't have enough money to get started. So if anyone wants to invest in a global Ponzi scheme to earn millions, please let me know. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, man, I was just reading chapter 7 of Bernie's book. Apparently, one of the keys to starting a Ponzi scheme is You don't tell people it's a Ponzi scheme. Ugh, I just can't get a break. Remember, be yourself. Be an individual. Don't be who they want you to be. Be Antonio Graceffo. No. I mean, be who you want you to be. And I'm Antonio Graceffo, the Brooklyn Monk in Asia, reminding you to go out and do something stupid today.